Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Up front next, breaking news targeting Americans. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff telling reporters Iran meant to kill U.S. troops. Plus, on edge, two rockets landing near the United States Embassy in Iraq tonight. We are learning more about that strike at this hour. And why did a Boeing 737 crash in Tehran, killing 176 on board, just hours after Iran launched an attack on the United States? Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, the breaking news. Iran was targeting U.S. troops. This according to the top U.S. general, who tells CNN tonight that Iran meant to kill U.S. troops when it fired 16 ballistic missiles at two Iraqi bases housing American forces. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, telling reporters tonight, "I believe, based on what I saw and what I know, that they were intended to cause structural damage, destroy vehicles and equipment and aircraft, and to kill personnel. That's my own personal assessment." General Milley's assessment is in stark contrast, though, to what has others in the administration have been telling CNN, which is that they believe Iran did not intend for its rockets to hit American troops at either base they struck in Iraq. And that could be the reason why Trump didn't have to strike back, sending the United States closer to all-out war. Milley's jarring and blunt statement about Iran's intent to target American troops comes as we are learning the White House did consider hitting Iran back after the missile attack last night. A source telling CNN Iran sent multiple messages to the United States through three different back channels through the night last night with the message of the attacks are done. The president repeated that message today.
Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world.
President Trump also standing down, doing a complete about face of his promise on Twitter when he said, quote, "Should Iran strike any U.S. person or target, the United States will quickly and fully strike back and perhaps in a disproportionate manner." The president also doing a 180 on using state-of-the-art military equipment against Iran. Listen to what Trump said today about the U.S. military.
"The fact that we have this great military and equipment, however, does not mean we have to use it. We do not want to use it."
Well, that is good and is a total about-face from what Trump tweeted just days ago. This is the same person. "If Iran attacks an American base or any American, we will be sending some of that brand new, beautiful equipment their way and without hesitation." Luckily, he hesitated. He didn't mean what he said. But how does the world know that the Trump of tomorrow won't reverse course again? Barbara Starr is out front live at the Pentagon. And Barbara, General Milley, with stark contrast here to what we've heard from others in the administration in terms of targeting U.S. troops. And also tonight, your reporting still very concerned about the threat from Iranian proxies.
You know, look, General Milley says he still wants to see more intelligence about all of this, but this is a four-star general with decades of experience on the front line. So he does not make these statements lightly by any stretch. He is basically saying you have to assume he believes the Iranians were out to kill Americans, despite these background briefings from administration officials today claiming that the Iranians had some unusual, extraordinary capability to target bases and avoid any place where an American troop might be. What really happened is the U.S. got intelligence through satellites and radars that those missiles were on their way, and they had enough time to move U.S. troops out of the way. That is a very typical U.S. military strategy. They move troops out of the way. They send them to bunkers. They disperse them to safe locations. That's how, in the view of General Milley, no U.S. troops were killed. There's no evidence at this point, in his view, by virtue of what he's saying, that the Iranians had some extraordinary ability to avoid hitting U.S. troops. He also, as you mentioned, Erin, is extraordinarily blunt on the way ahead. He says that for those in U.S. military uniform, the uniformed commanders. They believe that Iranian-backed Shia militias still very much are interested in further attacks. That is a matter of great concern to them. So he is not by any stretch tonight endorsing the notion that this is all over. He, in fact, perhaps has more concern than ever before. Erin?
Well, all right, Barbara Starr, very sobering. Thank you. And the contradictions that we are hearing from some in the administration and the top general in the country, General Milley, comes as the Secretaries of Defense and State, along with the head of the CIA and Milley, the head of the Joint Chiefs, briefed Congress about the intelligence that President Trump used to justify killing the second most powerful person in Iran. And there was bipartisan outrage from some about the briefing.
We had 97 senators there. 15 got to ask questions. As the questions began to get tough, they walked out.
Probably the worst briefing I've seen, at least on a military issue, in the 9 years I've served in the United States Senate.
Up front tonight, Democratic Senator Ron Wyden. He's on the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's also the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. And I appreciate your time. Senator, thank you for being with me. You know, what was your reaction to the briefing today?
I've been to these briefings, and I will tell you, there just has been so little content from this administration. And what they're doing, I don't think it's their intent, is they're building support for those of us who think it's time on a bipartisan basis for the Congress to draw a line in the sand and finally rein in executive power. Under Article 2, the president's view that he's above the law just isn't a good policy for America.
So, you know, the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, is pushing back on some of the complaints we heard. Obviously, that was Senator Schumer and Lee. We heard similar from Senators Paul and Blumenthal, others. Esper says most members of Congress don't have access to the intelligence that I think was the most compelling. He said, oh, only the Gang of Eight got to see that. Now, you got to see more than most, right, in your capacity on the Intelligence Committee. Obviously not as much as the Gang of Eight, but more than anyone in the room saw today. What do you say to Secretary Esper when he says there is just something so compelling out there that he can't show everybody?
Erin, my view is, and I can't get into classified matters, is this administration has not made the case that there was an imminent threat. Now, the president spoke to the nation today. He did not make things worse. And I'll just tell you that that is an embarrassingly low bar to set for the most powerful country in the world.
So when we hear the briefing was extremely contentious, what was it like? Would you agree with that?
Again, you can't get into details about classified briefings. But what I will tell you is, yes, I do think that senators are getting increasingly frustrated at the lack of content. And there are some tough questions that need to be answered. I had a community meeting on Saturday in Oregon, small town Monmouth. A woman came up to me in tears, an older woman, and she said, my boy is in Kuwait. Is he going to be safe? And it's those kinds of questions that the administration has to stop ducking.
So you know, I just pointed out some of the inconsistencies here, Senator. And I pointed out that the administration's contradicting itself on something crucial, which is General Milley, right, the top American general, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said Iran meant to kill American troops. That is his personal belief, and that was the point and that was their goal. As you heard Barbara Starr say, that contradicts the background briefings that others in the administration have been giving when they have been saying, no, 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 Iran intentionally missed American troops. Which do you think it is?
What I will tell you is these are the tough questions, and we've got to get answers to them. I was one of 23 in the Senate who voted against going to war in Iraq. The night before the vote, I was able to get declassified a document from the CIA director to our committee saying Saddam Hussein really wasn't a threat unless you pushed him, unless you provoked him. So there are a lot of unanswered questions. And when you have administration officials, as you've been pointing out, as Barbara Starr has been pointing out, that can't even agree with each other, what I think is it's time for them to step up and respond to the tough questions like I heard from that mom in Monmouth, Oregon, who wants to know if her kid's going to be safe.
So you have called General Soleimani, obviously, the top general in Iran, who President Trump killed in that strike, a bad man with a lot of blood on his hands. Of course, you've criticized Trump by saying the decision to assassinate him was a reckless escalation. I'm quoting you there. I want to play some more about what President Trump said today.
The fact that we have this great military and equipment, however, does not mean we have to use it. We do not want to use it.
That is the opposite of what he said the other day on Twitter when he said, if Iran attacks any American or an American base, we will be sending some of that brand new, beautiful equipment their way without hesitation. I know you're glad that he has completely reversed course. However, do you have any confidence that he won't do so again?
No. And the fact is, he is always all over the map. I mean, for example, the quote that you gave where he said we shouldn't use our military equipment reminds me of what he said in the campaign, that he was against endless wars. And I believe what we're looking for on the key committees, and the Intelligence Committee is the one that I serve on, is some sense that there is a clear strategy, a clear direction. And I will tell you, as I listen to Donald Trump on a lot of these issues, I hear echoes of both Iraq, and I mentioned the Iraq war, where I don't think the tough questions were asked, and Vietnam. I hold the Senate seat of Wayne Morris, one of two who voted against going to war in Vietnam. I hear a lot of echoes of those past conflicts.
Senator Wyden, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next, two rockets explode tonight, and it is right by the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. So we have some new details in terms of what we're learning about those. Plus, why President Trump simply cannot stop talking about President Obama.
The missiles fired last night at us and our allies were paid for with the funds made available by the last administration.
And a shocking announcement from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. They're stepping back from their senior roles in the royal family, moving away. And it appears they did not even consult the royal family. New tonight, two rockets landing inside the Green Zone in Baghdad, home of the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. The attacks coming as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs says militias with ties to Iran will continue to attack Americans. Clarissa Ward is out front in Erbil, Iraq, which is one of the where one of the bases are that were hit by Iranian ballistic missiles yesterday. Clarissa, President Trump today said, quote, Iran appears to be standing down. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs tonight says, I think it's too early to tell. His quote. What are you hearing tonight, Clarissa, about whether the United States Embassy in Iraq was targeted tonight?
Well, I think precisely because of what we know, that two rockets hit the Green Zone, neither caused any casualties. They were Katyusha rockets. Of course, the Green Zone is the heavily fortified area of Baghdad that is home to the U.S. Embassy. And this will have a lot of people on high alert, a lot of people very concerned that this was potentially targeting U.S. either embassy workers, civilians who are affiliated with the U.S. mission in Iraq in some way. At this stage, Aaron, we simply don't know exactly what prompted this attack or who was responsible for it. So far, nobody has actually claimed responsibility. And it is important to emphasize for our viewers that these types of rocket attacks on the Green Zone are not uncommon. But certainly, given the events that have transpired in the last 24 hours and the sort of real shift in the dynamic that we're seeing here in Iraq with this surge of anti-U.S. sentiment, this will be of grave concern to a lot of people who believe that while the official Iranian response may be over, it might be more difficult for some of these Shia militias that bear allegiance to Iran, who are big fans of Qasem Soleimani, to rein in the passions of some of their supporters and stop these sorts of attacks from happening, Aaron.
Clarissa Ward, thank you very much. Out front from Erbil tonight. And now retired Air Force Colonel Cedric Layton joins us, along with former BBC State Department correspondent Kim Gaddis. She's also the author of a new book called Black Wave, about the rivalry between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And David Gergen, who advised four presidents, including Presidents Nixon and Clinton. Colonel Layton, let me start with you. General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is saying Iran did intend to kill American troops. If that really was the intent, if he is correct, he's a four-star general. Does that alone change things now?
Well, it could, Aaron. And, you know, it's very interesting that General Milley mentioned that. Obviously, General Milley has access to all kinds of intelligence that we don't have access to. So his assessment could very well be based on something that he's seen in that intelligence. It would change things because it's a matter of intent. If the Iranians intended not to hit a target and they did, in fact, do it, the result would be very bad, even if the intent was was not to cause any damage. And the same thing, if they intended to do something and they did it, it would also be bad. But regardless, intention does matter in this particular case, and that's where the intelligence picture is going to be critical in the assessment of this particular issue.
I mean, David, this is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs going against what administration officials are saying on background and what they are making, you know, it seems very clear, has been used to justify why President Trump did not feel the need to strike back, which was Iran needed to do this. They were put into a corner, but they didn't try to kill anybody. And so we can all, as the president says, you know, they're backing down.
Yeah, or they're standing down. I think he used that phrase, which was different from backing down in terms of its implication. Backing down sounds like, hey, I'm surrendering.
Yeah.
So in any event, I do think it's just significant whether, in fact, they did try to kill Americans or not. I don't think it's going to change the dynamics generally of where we are now, but it does. It then, it winds into calculations you make in the future about what we're facing.
That's right. What they're willing to do.
What they're willing to do. And it also feeds into this question of who lobbed those missiles into the green zone. Were the people working for the government, were the government military people, or were they some kind of rogue militia operation? I think we're going to see more of this in part because this isn't over by any means. And there are going to be continued efforts by people in Iraq to force Americans to chase Americans out of Iraq.
Kim, this also comes as, the president today said that he's got a great military and doesn't need to use it, right? But he was able to take the high road. Let me just play that part again for you, Kim.
The fact that we have this great military and equipment, however, does not mean we have to use it. We do not want to use it.
That's the exact opposite sentiment, Kim, that he expressed on Twitter days ago. I read this again. If Iran attacks an American base or any American, we will be sending some of that brand new, beautiful equipment their way and without hesitation. So Iran did just that, attacks a base. Trump had said he would attack, and he didn't. Obviously, that's something to celebrate. But the question, Kim, is, do the Iranians, does anyone trust that he will not change his mind and go right back to where he was for no clear reason tomorrow?
It's very hard to predict how President Trump will react when we see the next Iran move. But waking up this morning in Beirut in the Middle East, it very much felt like we were very close to war. It was a scary moment, to say the least, to hear of, Iranian missiles being lobbed at Iraqi bases where there are U.S. forces. And then, in a few hours later, it looked more like a very dangerous dance, but a dance nonetheless, where everybody was able to posture, to claim that they had the upper hand, that they had struck back, retaliated, and that red lines were drawn, and that everybody had made their position clear. I mean, you saw from President Trump's tweet that all is well, no American lives were lost. You saw from the Iranian foreign minister's tweet as well that everybody understood that there was a limit to this round, that this round is over, but we simply don't know what the next round looks like. And I do want to point out that the worst of this is that the Iraqis are stuck in the middle, and it is a very scary moment for them. They've been through so much over the last few decades, and they've just started to rebuild their own country, and this is now coming at a time where they're trying to reclaim their future and build their future, and now they find themselves stuck again in this very dangerous dance between Iran and the United States.
So, Colonel, so the term Kim's using, this dangerous dance, and wondering whether there is another round, Mike Morrell, the former acting director of the CIA, had a very grim prediction earlier today. Here he is.
I still think that down the road we will see an Iranian terrorist attack against a senior official.
To be clear, he's talking about a senior American official, and that would be an eye for an eye, Colonel, when you look at Soleimani. Do you think Director Morrell is right?
I think there's a real big chance that Director Morrell is right, Aaron, and that's something that should concern every American official, especially those who are in the Middle East. But it's really anywhere. They can strike anywhere, and they've done that in the past. They've tried to assassinate Saudi officials here in Washington. So that's the kind of thing that we have to expect from the Iranians. We hope it doesn't come to that, but I think it's a distinct possibility.
That is sobering. All of you, please stay with me. Next, it is the name that President Trump continues to repeat again and again and again this week with Iran, but always when talking about foreign policy.
President Obama, Obama, you did nothing.
Why the obsession? And what caused a massive, horrific plane crash? A Boeing 737 crashing in Tehran. Every single person on board dead. Nearly 200 people. And it happened just as Iran was launching more than a dozen missiles at U.S. troops. Tonight, Trump's Obama obsession. In the middle of Trump's address to the nation today, the president blamed his predecessor for Iran's attack on a U.S. airbase in Iraq.
The missiles fired last night at us and our allies were paid for with the funds made available by the last administration.
The president is talking about Iranian funds that were unfrozen as part of the nuclear deal that Obama signed. Former Obama aide Ben Rhodes arguing on Twitter, quote, Iran did not fire a single rocket at U.S. interests in Iraq during the Iran deal. Just look at what Iran has done since Trump pulled out of that deal. Caitlin Collins is out front. Caitlin, Trump is trying to put the blame for all of this on Obama.
Yeah, you see there he's saying that, talking about what has happened with Iran since the president pulled out of the Iran deal. But the president made clear today in his speech that is not something he regrets. And he didn't mention President Obama by name today when he was addressing reporters during those remarks. But it was pretty clear who he was talking about as he was referencing, Aaron, that past administration. And this isn't just the first time the president has done this. Of course, this is something that dates back to the beginning of the president's campaign. And just as recently as Monday, when the president did that interview with the radio host Rush Limbaugh, he brought up President Obama by name at least four times during a pretty quick interview. And it's not just him in the administration who keeps bringing up President Obama. You saw the Secretary of State do the same thing during his interviews on Sunday. And really, Aaron, what you've seen more than anything is Obama has loomed over President Trump's foreign policy, at least, more than any other president that the president has criticized. Now, if you speak to aides inside the White House or former national security aides, they'll say it's not just Obama who counters and factors into the president's decisions when it comes to foreign policy. He also thinks of people like President George W. Bush. But you really see Obama in a way that you don't see any other presidents have influence over President Trump's decisions, especially when it comes to Iran. And you've seen him talk about the Iran nuclear deal, something he pushed to withdraw from and, of course, ultimately did, despite the objections of his own national security aides at the time. And even today, as we are in this rising conflict between the United States and Iran, as you saw the president today, it is something he still continues to invoke. And it really is notable to see just how it looms over his foreign policy decisions.
All right, Caitlin, thank you very much. I want to go out front now to our panel. John Gans also joins us, former chief speechwriter at the Pentagon during the Obama administration and author of White House Warriors, A New History of the National Security Council. So, John, let me start with you. In the middle of this important speech to the nation, President Trump, he brings up the last administration multiple times, blaming that administration. In the interview with Rush Limbaugh, he mentions Obama by name four times. Your reaction?
Well, I think this was the president's sort of best stab at sort of presidential rhetoric, right? Wartime rhetoric that we've sort of grown accustomed to over the years. And I think I've looked at presidential speeches going back to Harry Truman, and President Trump kind of forgot the Truman rule, which is the buck stops with the president. And especially on foreign policy, most Americans believe the buck stops with the president, and he has to deal with the world and the challenges it faces. I think most Americans would probably are well aware that President Obama hasn't held the keys to the Situation Room in quite a while, though President Trump seems to kind of be intent on bringing him up. And personally, as somebody who served in the Obama administration, I would say that most Americans probably might err for a little more of President Obama's sort of long-sighted, calm, cool, collected approach to foreign policy today. And President Trump keeps bringing them up and reminding them that.
So David, the president mentioned President Obama every single day this week when discussing Iran. On Monday, he said, I think that the Obama administration was just letting them get away with murder. And then here are two different days, yesterday and today, and two different comments.
His past was horrible. He was a terrorist. He was so designated by President Obama, as you know. The missiles fired last night at us and our allies were paid for with the funds made available by the last administration.
Obviously, on a technical basis, there'd be no way for him to ever prove any such thing. But the big question is, David, is President Obama the driving force behind Trump's foreign policy? Because he brings him up so much. It's always, well, he did this, so I'm going to do that.
I don't know what possesses him on things like this. This is a moment for statesmanship. He comes out and gives the cheapest of cheap shots at a predecessor. That just doesn't happen among former presidents usually. One day he's supposed to be part of this fraternity of former presidents. They support each other. They have a lot of respect for each other. I think it reflects on Donald Trump much more than on Obama himself. I don't know. Beyond the narcissism, I think there's a jealousy there. He thinks he's been the best president ever, and Obama is more popular than he is. I'm sure there's an element
that bothers him.
Yes, that bothers him, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if there's an element about Michelle and how popular she is. Her book continues to be a wonderful bestseller, and he thinks Melania should be the one who should be honored. And Michelle comes out on top in the most admired women in the United States. She's number one, I think, again this year. So there's just a multitude of things there. I don't think it's race. I that would be the easy way to go. I do think it's much more about...
It's much deeper than that. It's about his ego.
I'm me, and I want to talk about me, and don't let this shadow come over me.
So you know, Kim, this is not the only time President Trump has attacked Obama on foreign policy and brought it up, you know, sort of as he did this, so I'm this. Listen to this.
President Obama wanted to meet, and Chairman Kim would not meet him. The Obama administration was begging for a meeting.
You know, President Obama used to send pillows and sheets. I said anti-tank weapons and a lot of things to Ukraine.
Al-Baghdadi created a caliphate bigger than the state of Ohio. And with Obama, you did nothing. You did nothing but get your ass kicked.
So, Kim, in Iran, in the when we're dealing with the situation we're dealing with now, what do they make of President Trump's obsession with President Obama?
Well, I'll tell you, to start with President Trump's comment about the missiles being paid for by the Obama administration, I think that's a little bit unfair because, of course, you know, the missiles were a response to a decision taken by President Trump, which was, you know, to allow the targeted killing of Qasem Soleimani. So, as you know, other panels have been saying, the buck stops with the president. And obviously, the missile Iran's missile program predates the nuclear deal that President Obama signed. But in the Middle East, I must say that a lot of America's allies, like Saudi Arabia, did think that President Obama's policies enabled Iran to become more powerful, mm-hmm. enabled Iran to become bolder in its regional expansionist policies. And that was also facilitated by the nuclear deal. Now, Obama administration officials will tell you that the nuclear deal did its, you know, served its purpose. It boxed in Iran's nuclear program. It curbed it. It limited it. And they will insist that the goal was never to curb Iran's regional ambitions, that was a separate thing. However, Iran, under the nuclear deal, did expand its role in the region, as was demonstrated over the last few years, particularly in Syria.
Well, let's come back to this. Trump repeatedly acts as if the United States sent money, its own money, to Iran as part of the nuclear deal. It was Iranian money that we unfroze and gave back
that
to them.
Correct.
It's their money, not our money.
Right, which is obviously is also true. And John, quickly, before we go, the obsession, what does President Obama make of it? Do you know?
I don't know personally. My hunch is that he probably thinks that more and more that the comparison is going to play to Democrats' favors in 2020. And I think he probably thinks that Americans are probably looking for a little more dose of how Obama handled the world and handled the presidency, looking at the sort of mess President Trump's made, both in decision-making and in the region today.
All right. Thank you all very much. And next, the plane crash. A jet carrying 176 people crashed in Tehran just hours after Iran's initial attack on U.S. troops. Iran says it was a mechanical issue. So why don't they hand over the black boxes? And a growing number of Democrats saying to Nancy Pelosi, send those articles of impeachment over to the Senate. Will she listen? Tonight, the mystery growing over what caused a Boeing plane only 3.5 years old to crash as it was departing Tehran's international airport on its way to Kiev, Ukraine. The crash happening just hours after Iran launched those 16 missiles at U.S. bases in Iraq. All 176 people on board were killed in that crash. And tonight, Iran says it is not handing over the black boxes. Tom Foreman is out front.
The Ukrainian Airlines jet, loaded with 176 passengers and crew, takes off from Tehran before dawn. Minutes later, an eyewitness seemingly records it coming down, a bright streak across the sky, trailing flaming debris as it plunges to the ground in a ball of fire with no survivors. God help us, he says. Quickly, the Iranians say a mechanical issue was to blame, and the Ukrainians post an online notice saying terrorism was not involved. But then it all goes sideways. The Ukrainians delete that message, and their president says a special investigative team is being sent to establish the truth and those responsible for this terrible catastrophe. Part of the sudden suspicion may flow from the timing. The plane came down just hours after Iran fired retaliatory missiles at U.S. military post in Iraq. So a source tells CNN American intelligence agents, while not necessarily drawing any connection, are taking a look at the crash. Part of it is also practical.
This gives me the shivers.
Former federal crash investigator Peter Gold says that eyewitness video in particular just doesn't look normal.
If that were an engine failure, it would be a much less intense light. There's an explosion just before it hits the ground. And to top it off, there were no emergency mayday calls from the crew, apparently. It is very disturbing.
Other factors? The crew was so experienced, the Ukrainians are saying, we do not even consider pilot error a chance. The plane was only 3 years old, and the Iranians, despite having reportedly recovered the cockpit, voice, and flight data recorders, so far are not letting anyone else look at them, and they are refusing to allow Boeing, which made the jet, to join the investigation.
Boeing, Ukraine, Iran, the United States, is as if a whole year of tumultuous events somehow collided around this one terrible, terrible moment, potentially complicating the conversations about all of them. Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much, Tom. As you heard Mr. Gold say, it gives him the shivers. I want to go now to former CIA operative Bob Baer. Bob, how suspicious is this to you?
Aaron, you know, really the coincidence of these ballistic missiles being fired shortly after that, this plane goes down. I think a rocket probably hit it. Speculation at this point, but in the absence of any other fact, most likely explanation is a rocket of some sort hit an engine, took it down. Fact that there was no mayday, there's no other explanation. The Iranians came out very quickly and said, look, it's technical problems. How would they know? And the fact that they're not turning the black box over tells me that they're probably guilty.
Explain to me what you think, how in the world this could have happened, because it was hours after the initial missile attack. But you're saying, I mean, that you believe Iran was responsible. I know you used the word rocket, but what's your theory?
Well, what happens after this is the Iranians were expecting to be hit, including Tehran Airport. They probably had surfaced air missile sites on. They've got blips on the radio, on the radar. It's coming up. They see all this stuff in the sky. There were American airplanes in the sky. Somebody made a mistake. I don't think they did it on purpose. But, you know, in the middle of a combat sequence like this, this is what happens.
Oh, awful. All right, Bob Baer, thank you very much. Obviously, a lot of questions and it is unclear what answers, if any, we will get since Iran is refusing to hand over those black boxes. Thank you, Bob Baer. And next, new calls for Nancy Pelosi. She's getting ready to move a war powers bill, right, on authorization of force. But there are many now in her own party who want her to move on the articles of impeachment.
I think it's time to turn the articles over.
I think it is time for the speaker to send the articles over.
Will she listen to her own party? And a royal shakeup, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle stepping back, saying sayonara to the royal family. Tonight, a growing number of Democratic senators urging Nancy Pelosi to end the stalemate with Mitch McConnell and send over the impeachment articles that they need to begin President Trump's impeachment trial.
I think it's time to turn the articles over. Let's see where the Senate can take it.
I think it is time for the speaker to send the articles over.
Dianne Feinstein, telling Politico, and I quote, "The longer it goes on, the less urgent it becomes. So if it is serious and urgent, send them over. If it isn't, don't send it over." It almost sounds like a Republican speaking. Out front now, Democratic Congresswoman Jackie Speier of California. She is on the Intelligence and Armed Services Committee. Congresswoman, does it surprise you to hear this pressure coming from your Democratic colleagues in the Senate? They want it. They want it yesterday. And from Dianne Feinstein, even making an argument Republicans make, which is, hey, if it's urgent, send them if you've got something to say.
Well, let me say that the Speaker of the House is prepared to send the articles over. What we have had happen since we took the action we did is we have now found out that the administration has once again been part of a cover-up so that documents that were made available because of a Freedom of Information Act request were not disclosed. And we've also had Mr. Bolton come forward and say that he's willing to testify before the Senate. So I think her putting a pause has actually helped the Senate in its negotiations for witnesses. And I think that's going to be critical.
So let me ask you on that front. McConnell says witnesses will be considered later in the trial. That's the argument he's been making, you know, all the way along. As you point out fairly, there have been big developments over the past few weeks, but he has not moved on witnesses being a predicate to a trial. He has said he'll have the opening statements and then a vote. And some Senate Democrats are saying that they will have real leverage when that happens, when that vote occurs. So the trial will have technically begun, but then they vote on witnesses that they would have some leverage there. Do you think they're wrong?
Well, I think that what will happen is that they'll have opening arguments, they'll present their case, and then he will want to close, and then they will have the opportunity to seek witnesses. I don't think that makes sense. When Clinton was impeached, all the witnesses and Clinton himself had complied with the requests made by the House in the investigation. None of that has taken place in the House. We have put this together really with the benefit of Ambassador Volker's text messages and the comments made by the Ambassador Sondland. So we do need to hear from Bolton. We do need to hear from Duffy. We do need to hear from others who have declined to meet the subpoena request because the president has told them to.
Look, anyone who wants to know everything about this, it would be intellectually dishonest to say they didn't want to hear from John Bolton or Mick Mulvaney. I think that, that one has to just be honest and say that. But it may not happen in the Senate. So if it doesn't, Can you say that the House of Representatives will subpoena John Bolton and that he will appear for the American people to hear what he has to say?
I'm not sure we're in a position right now to make that statement, or I think it's frankly premature because we have to see what happens in the Senate. Mr. Bolton has said he will testify in the Senate. If the Senate does not take him up on his offer, then I think the whole question becomes, was that really a trial at all? That oath they take for impartial justice, was that in fact met?
So the articles of impeachment, do you anticipate that they will be sent over by the end of this week?
I can't speak for the Speaker. That's a question for her. But I think she has every intention to do it in conjunction with the Senate Democrats. She's certainly been in consultation with them. And having heard from a number of Senate Democrats, I'm certain she will take steps as is appropriate.
All right. I appreciate your time, as always, Congresswoman. Thank you.
Thank you, Erin.
And next, a royal rift. We found out late today Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are breaking from the royal family, and they didn't tell anyone in the family. What is going on? Tonight, royal exit. A dramatic and shocking announcement from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex. They released a statement, and among many things in it, they said, quote, they will step back as senior members of the royal family and work to become financially independent. And they're not even going to live in the UK full time. And here's the thing about this. It's not just shocking that they're doing such a thing. It is that sources tell CNN that the Duke and Duchess did not consult other royals about the decision. CNN royal correspondent Max Foster is out front from London. Max, I mean, this is stunning. They didn't even consult with the royal family, with the Queen, with Prince Harry's own brother, William.
Unheard of, frankly, Erin. And we don't have these sort of breakdowns going public very often. Let's not say that they don't happen. This is a family. It's a working family as well. There are breakdowns within the family, but this has been building for some time, and this is a very public breakdown in the family. So I've been speaking to sources tonight, and they're saying things that they just don't say to reporters normally, because they try to hide these differences behind palace walls. They're saying there was no consultation with other senior members of the royal family. There's deep disappointment behind palace walls. And crucially, senior members of the royal family, William, Charles and the Queen, are hurt by this. The reason they're so upset is because the couple have made this announcement without consulting them. They've also come up with this very intricate website defining exactly what their new roles will be, how they'll be funded, how they're going to redefine their relationship with the media, where they're going to live, where they're going to get the money from, all these things. But they can't do it without the rest of the royal family. So the Buckingham Palace issued a statement saying, shortly after they made their statement, these are complicated issues that will take time to work through, i.e. hold back Sussexes. None of this has been agreed.
I mean, it is incredible, especially when you think about the, you know, for so many years, the close relationship that was so clear between those two brothers, and the sudden and obviously dramatic change in that relationship, a breakdown in that relationship, has been noticed by so many. I mean, why is this happening now, Max?
It's happening now, I think, because Harry's had a very long-term issue with being a public figure. It goes back to his very troubled childhood and the amount of pressure that was put on his mother, frankly. That has built over time. And the Duchess has really, really struggled with her public role and having to bite her lip all the time and not be herself and having to do things that the royal family expects of them. So I think it's just built to the point where they got to the end of last year and thought, right, we need some time out to think about this. They took 6 weeks off. They went to Canada. They came back and this is their solution. But they haven't really ironed out all the wrinkles just yet, let's say.
It's pretty incredible and pretty sad on a lot of levels just to see it all so publicly. Max, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you. Anderson starts now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.